It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the one with Wolverines in the attic. We've got some great stuff for you. We'll talk about, believe it or not, new products from Apple released today. We'll also take a little preview of the new Google Watch and how it might impact the Apple Watch. And what does HealthBook have to do with iOS 8? It's all coming up next. Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 394, recorded March 18th, 2014. Whatever you do, don't unpack. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Hover.com. Hover is the best way to buy and manage domain names. It's simple, honest, and easy to use. For 10% off your first purchase, visit hover.com/MacBreak3 and enter the offer code MacBreak3. And by FreshBooks, the simple online accounting solution built for small business owners, just like you, who want to skip the headache of tax time. For a limited time, try FreshBooks free for 60 days. To get started, visit GetFreshBooks.com now and enter MacBreakWeekly in the How Did You Hear About Us section. And by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free 2-week trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code MacBreak. It's time for MacBreak Weekly, the show that covers all of the Apple news, such as it is. Andy Iannocco is here from the Chicago Sun-Times. Sun-time.
Here, Leo, coming live from the famous Bath Bay, Maine submarine races.
It's Wally Ballou, ladies and gentlemen.
We had a lot of false starts there. Wally Ballou here.
Wally Ballou. Also here, Renee Ritchie from iMore.com.
Hey, Leo, I'm starting to thaw out finally.
Ah, you have, is spring come to Montreal?
I don't know if it's spring. It's whatever comes before spring when it's still snow on the ground, but you're not freezing when you go outside anymore.
Yeah.
Pre-spring.
We don't know. Yeah, I don't know. That's, you mean like all year round here?
Second winter.
Second winter. And now, ladies and gentlemen, I give you Alex Lindsay.
Hey, how's it going?
He is in Rwanda. It's the giant head of Alex. And look, the asteroids are coming in. He's rowing. He's doing, this is a travelogue. Hello, everybody. How are you? Alex is, are you at your, what do you call it? The
I'm at the African Digital Media Academy.
ADMA.
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 Exactly. I'm at ADMA. And and I'm training all week, so I'm here working with live streaming and keying, cool. Which is why we had this all set up, and we had a little trouble with Skype and then Hangouts, and so we're back to Skype.
Actually, looks good. Looks really good now. Yeah.
Yeah, so.
It's a beautiful African sunset. Oh, it was. Well, I've brought you all here to discuss the latest hot news from Apple, but that would be a very short show. So maybe we could talk about something else. I don't know.
There's a couple of interesting things here.
There's some interesting things. I think the big one is iOS 8 and the HealthBook leak. Do we credit Mark Gurman with this? Where did this leak come from?
That's all Gurman all the time.
All Gurman all the time. I love Mark. Writes for 9 to 5 Mac. And Renee, you probably know the kind of like the source for this information. Is this a beta version of iOS 8 that he's looking at?
I don't know if beta is the right word. We'll get the beta at if Apple holds to pattern, we'll get the beta at WWC 2013. But it's better to think of iOS like a continuum.
Wait a minute. Okay, let's fix that.
2014.
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry.
We are now in a new year.
It's so hard. Whenever Apple does a new version of iOS, there are features that are pushed down from the executives like Phil Schiller, and there are features that are pulled up from the engineers. Everyone can put their stuff in a big pile, and then Craig Federighi goes through and sorts them and puts them into what they have time and effort to put behind. And they'll start working on that kind of thing. And if they get it ready in time for iOS 8, it goes into iOS 8.
Got
and
it.
If for some reason it's not ready or politically it's not something they want to do, then it's either held off for the future. So, for example, things like inter-app communication have started to get bundled in 2 years ago, but they haven't surfaced yet. The app downloads that we got this year were being worked on previous to last year, but they weren't, you know, put out until this year. So it's hard to always tell, and Mark does a really good job of saying that in the article, that this is what Apple is currently working on, and that's what some developers there are working on. And if they get it finished, there's probably a good likelihood we'll see it in iOS 8.
So these screenshots, I mean, I don't think these are faked.
Those are their mock-ups based on what they heard of the app.
Oh, okay. This is really important. So this is not a screenshot.
Someone told him what it looks like. And then sometimes you have to, in order to protect a source, or because it's low quality, or because there's very easy ways to indicate where it came from, you get information and then you mock it up based on what you're told.
As detailed in the images throughout this article, which are complete recreations of screenshots. So they are screenshots recreated to hide the source, I guess.
Yeah, or to get good quality versions.
Right. Healthbook's user interface looks a lot like Passbook, but of course with different information. So let's take a look at what... Now, I admit to, you know, kind of overextending what this all means. I mean, this doesn't mean that Apple is going to have a device that tracks hydration, oxygen saturation, and blood sugar. Those things are hard to do.
Yeah.
Now.
And also, I think that... I'm sorry, go ahead, Renee.
No, I was just going to say they're hard to do now.
Yeah, but also the fact that they went for the Passbook model, realized that everything that we use in Passbook today, they're not features and sources that Apple actually creates. It's used as a way so the third parties can put something in that nice little organizer. So I think that also that does point to Apple having a phone that does a few things, but relying on outside sources to create their own blood glucose meter or their own blood pressure sensor or their own hydration sensor as a way to they can simply contribute to this one central clearinghouse app.
That makes sense. And it's like Microsoft's health database or Google's, you know, late lamented health database. You have lots of fields. Doesn't mean you're actually generating that information. There is one thing that I think is significant that I think Apple is going to do, and I hope they do. The very first card is an emergency card, and I'd love to see how this is implemented. But there is, you know, there are third-party apps that you could store your emergency information in. I'm allergic to penicillin, for instance, or, you know, I'm on certain medications. It would be great if first responders would have a way to access an Apple standard emergency card as soon as they see an iPhone, say, quick.
Particularly if it's on the lock screen. And also this isn't something that couldn't be done on Android or Windows Phone, but if you put it on an iPhone, first responders know how to, they're familiar with iPhone. They know exactly how to unlock these things. It's not going to be a mystery the way that like a lock screen app would be on an Android device.
Right.
And the one thing is interesting, if they are using the Passbook model, when Passbook was introduced, it was exactly what Andy said it was, and it still is in many ways, but they had Passkit below it that kind of abstracted everything away so that it would be very easy in the future to add mobile payments or to add, you know, contact-based payments. And if Healthbook has a health kit underlying it, which, you know, I'm guessing it might be, then as Apple provides more first-party services or as the third-party services grow, it's very easy to start just adding those in to an interface that people have already gotten used to through whatever first-generation products it comes on.
Have we seen any of the other tracking software the Nike if you're listening to this, they're keying me in front of planets anyway, so
like Ender's Game but for Alex Lindsay.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's awesome. So has anybody else shown calories? I mean, almost everybody else uses points, and my assumption was always because...
Oh, no. A lot of them have calories. MyFitnessPal has calories. Okay. A lot of them do calories. The issue is how do you get that information in? And like with MyFitnessPal or Lose It, you have to, by hand, say, oh, I had a piece of bacon, I had a cup of coffee. And that's a pain in the butt. This is great. And it could be very Passbook-like in the sense that it could actually be a limited utility because... You don't have anything that measures your blood sugar, your respiratory rate, your oxygen saturation, or your hydration. But what's interesting, as Mark Gurman points out, Apple has hired people in these areas, in these arenas, which kind of implies that they maybe would start building some functionality in.
The really cool thing, too, is when Apple put the M7 chip in, if you got a new fitness tracker or a new fitness tracking app, you didn't start day one with that. It could go back and pull everything the M7 chip had already tracked. So you'd have like a week's worth of data already in there, which is kind of a good way to encourage you. And then if you switch devices, you keep your data because that data is being kept track of in the M7 chip or now in Healthbook. And that's something that Apple likes to do, is to commoditize their complements so that if you move from Nike to Fitbit or to something else, your iPhone now means that that information is still valuable to you.
So how much of this do you think Apple will do? How much of it will third parties do? How much of it will be available when this thing comes out? How much it is blue sky?
Well, I think Apple's definitely going to take a couple of the high points, you know, a couple of things that are really going to give people examples that get people excited. I think that's kind of typical for them. And then try to leave the rest of the harder stuff to the folks. I think just because they hire people doesn't necessarily mean they'll develop it. I think that you also want to have those people on site to look at the software being created and give you a breakdown if, is this really any good? You know, I think that also it probably weighs into who they're hiring related to this thing.
And there's the Motorola rocker theory too. And Dave Wiskus did a good job of elaborating on this recently, where Apple likes to let other people make the mistakes first. So if they do the rocker, they can better figure out the iPhone. If they do CarPlay, they can better figure out an Apple implementation. And if they do Healthbook, they can see a whole bunch of people and how they use it and collect all that data. And then when they start adding Apple services to it, it's based on more than just what they're guessing.
Here, by the way,
also it's possible that they don't want any part of medical device construction. If they're blood sugar monitoring is literally a life or death piece of data.
Yeah.
And if Apple can simply say, tell you what, we're going to give you, manufacturer, the opportunity to make billions of dollars on this device while we quietly duck billions of dollars worth of liability in case in case the actual sensor screws up.
Here is the from Weibo now, the original screenshots. And Mark Gurman says, credit to Michael Stieber at 9to5 for making it look better than Apple's actual screenshots. These are supposedly the original screenshots. These are the much more lovely fake screenshots created on 9to5 Mac. They just reversed the order, because I was going to say the emergency card. Actually, they messed with the order of all of the things, so we can't deduce anything from the order. Does Apple have the hardware capability to interface with devices that would give you this information? For instance, if you're diabetic, you probably have some sort of pinprick device. I know there are iPhone apps, and there's even hardware that goes with the iPhone.
This is all Bluetooth LE, so.
Right.
Easy peasy.
Okay. The only thing that comes to mind is, gee, it'd be a shame if the only people who have the health benefits of all of this are Apple iPhone owners. You have to be an Apple customer. If you're an Apple customer, it's a good selling strategy. You live longer.
Got to imagine other manufacturers will do their versions of it fairly quickly.
Mm. Yeah, the Samsung S5 has a lot of, and actually some of the early, the S4 and the Note 3 have a lot of these features. They have an S Health app that does track this stuff.
That would be the nice thing. Again, there's no reason to assume that this doesn't all work with Bluetooth LE. And I feel as though if Apple were to make this into a serious feature and to stick with it and not just simply put it out there and hope that something happens with it, then it would certainly cause a lot of these companies to start to make affordable sensors and affordable wearable tracking devices and make it a lot easier for people to afford these devices. And then just as we tend to see with iOS development, they will make an app for the iOS first, and then after about a year, they will start to make the Android version of it. And so that will lead to that sort of egalitarian access to pretty much everybody who has any kind of a device. You're right, because a feature like this, it's in terms of wanting to change the world, it's great if you're helping people who own iPhones. It's awesome if you're helping everybody who has any kind of device.
Right. Wahoo makes devices that I've used, Bluetooth LE devices that talk to the iPhone, like a scale, and they make bicycle computers and stuff that would go right into your phone.
And we've seen with devices like Sonos, they stopped making their controller because it was much easier for them just to let Apple handle the display and the interface and all those things.
Yeah.
And these companies might find it really compelling to be able to put their UI on an iPhone than have to build their own UI on every device they make.
Yeah, if all you have to do is now make a band, and all I have to do is focus on that one component, the sensor, it not only makes that consumer device a lot easier for them to manufacture, but it also makes it easier for them to democratize the sensor itself. So people who do one thing well will do it exceptionally well, as instead of making this sort of, you know, half-hearted attempt that's kind of an okay software, but the sensor is kind of wonky, or the sensor is perfect, but there's no way that someone's going to use this 2 or 3 times a day, that sort of stuff.
It makes sense that Apple would also meet with the FDA to say, here's what we're going to do, here's what we're not going to do. We're not going to be, for instance, measuring blood level, blood glucose level, but we will give devices a way to interface to the phone and store that information. Dr. Mom in the chat room raises an interesting issue. There is a higher responsibility for Apple due to things like HIPAA regulations about privacy once they start putting information like that into the phone. There is a legal obligation to protect that information. Although, as we've learned, in fact, if you didn't listen to Steve Gibson last week on Security Now, in fact, I think he's going to continue that this week, he's been parsing through the Apple security document that we talked about a couple of weeks ago. And he's been extraordinarily impressed with the lengths and effectiveness that lengths Apple's gone to and the effectiveness with which they have achieved security on iOS. He says it really is, very, very high quality. So maybe it is prepared for this kind of thing.
Yeah. There are people there that care really deeply about that kind of stuff. They treat it as if their data, and they want the phone to work for them. So they're incentivized based. Even their business model is better aligned for it, and they are individually incentivized to make it highly secure.
Yeah.
And also, I think this is just remember, we were talking about when the iPhone 5S first came out, that we're talking about all the different features that are enabled by the A7 processor. I mean, it's a long, long list. And now we can add to that. It allows Apple to do products like this where they have a legal responsibility to keep data secure and safe. These are things that are a lot easier to do with the A7 than they would be with any other chip.
Spider is pointing us to a program in the App Store from DigiDoc. It's called Pulse Oximeter, that will measure heart rate, but also oxygen use. So there are, I don't know how well it works, but there's certainly some of the groundwork has done. iOS 7.05 breaks the accuracy, but we're working on a fix, they say.
It's like what Andy said with the responsibility thing. If you remember back, the original iPhone didn't allow turn-by-turn navigation because Apple didn't want to take responsibility for you driving your car into a lake. And then they allowed third-party ones, and then fast forward all the way to iOS 6, and there was an Apple turn-by-turn. And that took many, many years to get there, but they had a fairly they had a fairly easy plan to see in place for all that.
Yeah. By the way, this uses the camera to measure your heart rate. You put your finger over the camera. I imagine that iWatch, for instance, might have a better tool for that kind of thing.
Indeed.
Okay.
I find myself, every time I'm writing about this and I find myself about to type the word watch in regards to Apple, I find myself more and more wanting to hedge my bets and saying an Apple wearable device.
Ah, interesting. Not necessarily a watch, you say.
I'm now almost completely away from the idea that Apple's going to make something that is recognizably a wristwatch.
Right. It might tell you the time, but that might be the least of the functions.
Right. It's nothing like the Motorola device that's going to be shown off tomorrow. That's already been teased in a couple of images, which looks really nice. But I'm not sure if Apple really wants to go in the direction of something with a color screen with what is recognizably a real computer display on it.
Well, yeah, but I think something that does give you your time and gives you basically what notifications are. It's very hard for me to take myself seriously when I'm in a wheat field, and that's all I got to say. So, but I think that something that did give you those notifications, so you didn't have to take your phone out of your pocket, and gave you your time, and a couple other little bits and pieces would be, I think, a great add-on for most iPhone users.
Motorola has announced the Moto 360. This is based on another announcement that came from Google today of Android Wear. This makes a lot of sense from Google's point of view, that they would do the infrastructure, just as Android has become infrastructure for phones, they would do a version of Android that's for wearables. This is the Moto 360, which I have to think has been in the works since long before the announcement of the Motorola sale to Lenovo, which has not gone through yet. They're still a Google company. Moto 360, as you say, Andy, keeps you on time and up to date. It's a watch. without taking you out of the moment or distracting you, telling you what you need to know before you need it through subtle alerts and notifications. With a twist of the wrist, you could see who's emailing or calling or what time your next meeting is. So this very much is a notification watch. And you could say, okay, Google, and talk to the watch just as you can with your Moto X phone. And I have to say, this looks like a nice watch.
Yeah, it's a round screen, a round display. They're clearly trying to make it as easy as possible for someone to wear this thing and not be calling attention to the fact they've got something unusual on their wrist.
Right.
I mean, again, I'm at the end of my testing of the Pebble Steel, and it's certainly within the bandwidth of what you would expect a watch to look like, but people still expect to see a round disc on your wrist.
But this doesn't seem to have any health uses at all. It's really it's like the Pebble more, where it's notifications, it allows you, it does have a microphone, which means you can talk to the phone.
But it certainly has a motion sensor.
Yeah. Well, that's an easy thing to build in. I like how attractive, if that image on the Motorola blog is what it's going to look like, I like how attractive it is. I think it's a nice looking watch. Looks like a wristwatch.
Yeah.
I hope it's not a rubber band. I wish they wouldn't do that. Oh, look, they're making it with a MakerBot. This is going to really slow down production.
Are actually printed.
see that's kind of sad because we hear the stories about the stuff that Johnny Ive has in his office.
Yeah,
you know, a MakerBot. These amazing car size, everything
at Motorola.
We went on Amazon and
we use off the shelf technology. See if it really looks like that. And I guess it is. I mean, I know that's rendered, but that's pretty nice looking. Yeah. It's a leather band. All right.
I'm also really keen to see what people will do with the idea of a round user interface. That it's not necessarily a revolutionary idea, or you know, the human computer interface has been waiting for something as simple and effective as this. But everybody has always been designing interfaces for squares, things with corners in them. I'm interested to see what happens when they have to work with that kind of canvas, and also
I prefer
the mechanical interface they put onto it.
I prefer this, and I have to say, what I like is it has three dials. So for travelers, this is great. Is this the Google Wear, or is this the Moto 360 video? This is the Google Wear video. And these are all imaginary prototypes, and they take great pains to make them all look very different.
Well, if you look, it looks like it's showing off the LG Wear.
Google Now. Is there a Wear in it?
Yeah. So
here's what I find fascinating. If you look at my screen, this is the Moto Wear image from the Moto video. It is an analog clock. My daughter cannot tell time with an analog clock. She's 22.
Yep.
She doesn't. She's in Mexico right now. I said, "What time is it there?" She said, "I don't know. I can't read analog watch faces." I said, "Well, where's the big hand? 12. Where's the little hand? 20. Oh, it's 12:20. Oh, that's how that works. I mean, literally, they never studied it. She didn't need to. So this is very retro to have a clock with hands
using an abacus, Leo.
I'm sorry, Daddy. I don't know what the abacus is. It really surprised me. It's like, it wasn't that they probably did teach it, but I don't think she bothered learning it. She didn't need to.
Is that a class that they teach at UNLV for like the basketball students?
Yeah,
telling the time.
What time is it?
Semester one.
Now she can tie her own shoes, so I'm happy about that. But that's, by the way, I'm not being completely facetious. That's also a skill that's being lost in the age of Velcro sneaker attachments.
Yeah. I don't really buy shoes with laces anymore.
Yeah, who ties shoelaces?
No.
And she definitely doesn't know how to dial a phone.
We're simple folks.
call your father, Rappy.
We just switched from buckles to laces in about 1928. We're not ready for another huge change like that. But that also brings up another problem that I think Tim Cook actually mentioned a couple of weeks ago, which is that there are people who just have been broken from the habit of wearing a watch on the wrist they're not naturally looking to replace the timepiece on their wrist with another timepiece that does other things. To them, you're making the pitch that, wow, why would I have to wear this thing on my wrist every single day? I have to remember to put this on every single day. Why?
They might be actually smart because the people who wear watches probably do want an analog watch. I do,
and they're willing to shell out $250-$300 for it. So
now these are images from Motorola. That's it. These are images from Motorola, which imply that the face is not physical. I mean, that looks like these are
right, no,
these
that wouldn't be physical.
Yeah, these are These are Google Now cards. So yeah, this must be like Alex's green screen.
Yeah. Google Round.
Oh, I like that band.
When they made the Google Now interface, like the Siri cards, they were already imagining different screen sizes and different implementations. I think that's a reason why that, you know, the card interface in general is so popular now.
Yeah. See, there's the card interface, but that's round. So, wow, look at that. I like that. Did you see what she just did? She showed her watch. That'll work to the woman at the airplane. And they let her on board. I've got a QR code right here. I've tried that once.
Do you read QR codes, but not clock faces?
With all the traveling you do, Alex, have you ever done the passbook thing where you have the QR code?
Oh yeah, I do it. I do it all the time, actually.
How does the TSA react to that?
Yeah, they're fine. You actually get through the TSA faster with your QR code because they do this little, when you have a paper one, they do this little circling thing and they, you know, check things off. And when you have a phone, they just go click. Okay, you can go on.
Nothing they can do. They can't do anything.
You can go, here, just give me your ID. And it's like they're even like exasperated. Like, I don't even want to talk to you. You know, just get out of here. But the only thing is that there's the one thing I always look at is my battery when I walk into the airport. So if I've got it on passbook and my battery's at 8% or 10%, I go get a paper ticket because there's nothing worse than getting to the gate. You'll get through all the stuff and then you get to the gate and your phone dies. And then you don't have a ticket.
I had that problem. I couldn't pull it up.
I've done it twice.
Yeah.
It's very embarrassing.
Very embarrassing.
When I use that, no matter where it is, I always screenshot that page because I know I can get to the pictures roll. I don't necessarily. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's actually – the United app is actually really good at being able to just get it immediately. So it's actually easier than Passbook. Like first, I use Passbook all the time, but now I fly United most of the time. And so I just use their app.
Alex just glitched. Am I in the Matrix?
No, I got out of the middle of my little webcam. See, watch. Here we go.
I love it. He glitched.
It was a glitch. Here I come.
Oh, ooh. Man. I feel like I'm
see, it's catching focus.
I took the red pill.
There's an agent.
Like Robin Williams in that Woody Allen movie.
All right, let's take a break. Apple's, you know, everybody's got the story right now. I mean, Apple is putting it off. Do you think it'll be this summer? We've seen there are rumors about phones this summer, or when will we see this mythical watch emerge?
I think the WWDC is going to be pretty exciting myself.
You think that's
I think
that's
a lot
June,
of things,
right?
I think, it seems like the time to do it. It seems like what you'd want to do is show everybody what they can develop for. I think if, especially if you want developers to be working on it, give them some time to dig in.
I think Apple is under zero pressure whatsoever to ship this year. I wouldn't be surprised if they show something this year, especially just to developers. But Apple is feeling absolutely no pressure to get this out the door. And like Renee said, that they like the idea of other people rushing things to market so they can see not only how well these other approaches work in the real world, but also how consumers are being reached by this, what messages are working, what messages are not working. So I don't think they're under any pressure whatsoever.
Tim Cook did say new categories this year, though.
Yeah, you got an iPad 4 back, Leo. How much do you want from Apple?
There's your category.
I feel like there's pressure building because of all, you know, what Samsung's doing now, Motorola.
I think the real problem is that Apple's not making any money, and they don't have any money in the bank. So I think the real problem for them is that there's a lot of pressure for them to figure out how they're going to make rent. There's two kinds of people. There's people who are on payroll, and people who are trying to make payroll. And right now, you know, Apple is trying to make payroll. I think
Alex and I are trying to make payroll.
The terror.
Turns out
a terror every 2 weeks.
Here's a little something I learned. You can't use a MakerBot to make payroll. I found that out.
No. It's too thick. Yeah. It's too thick. That's the problem. Bills are too thick.
I told my employees, this week we're giving you casino chips, and they didn't buy it.
Twitch chips. We're paying you in Twitch chips.
Twitch chips. That's a $5 chip right there.
No one wants to work for granola either.
Twitcoin. Although we're paying you in Twitcoin, it's even better.
We're working on it in the basement right now.
Where is the founder?
Leo and I actually have a whole section of the basement committed to Bitcoin. We're just planning to just
That's our retirement plan.
Yeah, exactly.
And it works as a fabulous heating system. You get your buddy a Dogecoin. All right, we'll continue on. Alex Lindsay in Rwanda. He's on the fruited plains of Rwanda. even as we speak.
For planes, is the virtual planes of Rwanda.
It's beautiful. I didn't know that Rwanda was the wheat basket to the world. That's fascinating.
According to Chad. According to Chad.
Greetings from Alex Lindy's Windows XP desktop.
Wouldn't it be great? If everybody just did green screen like this, and then Chad would have. Oh wait, no, that
we should do this. We should do this. I think you're right. I think we need to send green screens to all our remote hosts, and then Andy, instead of having a giant Boston clock over his shoulder, he could be in the clock.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I'll be hanging off it like Harold Lloyd. I also need to invoice you for a straw hat and a pair of round glasses.
Harold Lloyd knew where the big hand was. I can tell you that right now. Our show today brought to you by Hover.com. I want you to visit Hover.com/MacBreak3 to buy from the best domain registrar out there. It's the one I use. All of my domains are registered at Hover.com. Hover makes it easy. If you have, as I do a lot, a great idea and you want to, I got to get that domain name. It's so funny to watch Dick D. Bartolo. He says, he has hundreds of domain names. But Hover makes it very simple, straightforward. You don't have to go through 100 clicks to buy it. They know you want, for instance, privacy on your domain name. So who is privacy is always included with domains registered with Hover at no extra charge. They offer the, stock domain names, the .coms, the .nets, the .orgs. And by the way, .net, a little plug for .net. It's a great choice if you can't get the .com. I have leolaporte.net, not .com. They also, though, do TV, .tv, .pro, Mobi, Biz, IO, country codes like CA, Asia, US, and the UK. Right now, lower prices for .me, .co, and .info domains. They're having a sale. Hover's great. They also offer Google Apps. Now, if you don't know, maybe you use Google Docs sometimes. If you are a business, you can use Google Apps at your domain. So, for instance, mail.twit.com is our corporate mail address. docs.twit.tv, I should say, is our corporate. So that's Google Apps for business, and it's really great. But you want to have a domain name that reflects your business. Register at hover.com, and then you can use Google Apps for your business for as little as $6 per user. And the support comes not from Google, but directly from Hover, which is great. Gmail, of course, Calendar, Drive, Docs, the whole package. It can be added to a new domain, or if you've already got one for your business, it can be added to your existing domain. They do all the hosting for you. They make it easy. And there's a 30-day trial to see if Google Apps for business is for you. Hover.com. No upselling, no charging for something that should just be there, like subdomains, URL forwarding. They include everything you need with your domain, no more, no less. They don't do hosting, no. They give you a smart control panel that lets you manage your domain easily. Choose the host you want. No hold, no wait, no transfer phone support at Hover.com. You will speak to a live person when you call during their hours who's empowered and eager to help. Also a great online help at Help@hover.com. So hover.com/MacBreak3 will get you 10% off your first purchase. So stock up on some domain names today at hover.com/MacBreak3. You're watching MacBreak Weekly. And I was wrong. There's actually a lot of Apple news. Today, Apple put on sale an 8 gigabyte version of the iPhone 5C. Is this finally the low-cost iPhone 5C we've been waiting for, Renee Ritchie?
No. It's still, the pricing was unclear to me this morning. It was on a couple of British carriers, but I didn't. Apple put out a press release for the iPad 4 return, but they didn't put out one, at least as far as I've seen yet, for the iPhone 5C. So I don't know what pricing will turn out to be, but even for $100 less, 8 gigabytes is so anemic on iOS 7.
It is not worth it.
How much free room do you have on 8 gigabytes?
You have free room, but four or five gigs? It's going to go quickly.
Right.
It's just pain. I mean, I find it painful. No. Like, if you don't do anything,
You put one movie on it, and now it doesn't have enough memory to install anything.
It's about in England, it's about $100 cheaper. It's £60 cheaper.
Our Android site, Android Central, put up a quick post saying these are all way better Android phones you could buy for less money.
Yeah. So why do it?
To argue with them. The most rational explanation I've heard is that they want to end of life the iPhone. The iPhone 4 is still on sale in China and India. The iPhone 4S is still on sale in almost every market. That has the old 3.5-inch display, the old 30-pin dock connector, and it has 8 gigabytes of memory already. So if you were thinking about getting, you know, the $0 phone eventually on contract, this might be a sign that they're going to get rid of those phones faster. And as they start to prepare for iOS 8 this September, get the iPhone 5C down to where that can be the $0 phone.
Does it matter? Does Apple even care?
I mean, they care to have an entry-level phone. It's a slot that they're going to want to fill year after year. I don't know how much
No, I was just saying that I think they also want to get rid of that 30-pin connector. I think we all want to get rid of the 30-pin connector.
And to that end, there is a new iPad.
Yep.
A new old iPad.
A new old iPad. This is the iPad 4, which is one gen... somebody has to explain this to me.
Late 2012 iPad 4.
Why? Please, Apple, can you give them numbers for crying out loud? I guess is now we know why they don't, right? So they were selling the iPad 2. They discontinued that. That was the kind of really low-priced 30-pin connector iPad, mostly for education. And one of the things we thought is that the reason they continue to sell that is that a lot of schools and other people had invested money in 30-pin connector things, like big charging racks,
yep,
all with 30-pin connectors. But now they've got a Lightning iPad 4. Is that right?
Yep, Retina display, Lightning, 16 gigabytes, same price.
$399.
Yeah, or $529 with LTE.
So forget the iPad 2. That's gone. If you're going to get a cheap iPad, get the iPad, the fourth generation, whatever the hell it is.
It's a much better machine. Not only does it have the Retina display, it has an A6X chipset, not the old A5 chipset.
It's fast enough to handle a Retina display, unlike the third generation iPad.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's just big and beefy, unlike the iPad Air.
And it's got a Lightning connector.
So the only difference, the real difference is it's not Air-sized. It's the old size. And they are now complete. Apple sells nothing with a 30-pin connector. Is that right?
The iPhone 4S is still for sale as of this morning.
Damn it.
And the iPhone 4 in India and China.
Okay, sorry. Yeah, but I think we can expect to get rid of that. I mean, you know, it's so funny. The 30-pin seemed fine before the Lightning bolt, you know, the Lightning bolt cable came out. And now I still have an iPad 3 that I haven't figured out what I wanted to get. And it's the only thing left in my collection. I have these 30-pin, two 30-pin cables that travel around with me. And every time I click it in, I'm like, I can't believe we ever did this.
So I mean, it's like an animal.
Now, So just to be very clear, there's no 2, 3, 4. We're just saying that because for some reason we think we need to say that.
Yeah. Well,
there are four models of iPads. There's the iPad with Retina display. That's the one that's the cheesiest one. The least expensive one.
There's iPad Mini is the least expensive one.
Oh,
the
old crap.
iPad Mini.
They still sell that?
Oh, and that's the only non-Retina display iOS device left.
Okay. So the least expensive is the $299 iPad Mini. The next one up is the iPad Retina display. That's $399. That's the... forget it. And
it's
then...
fourth generation iPad.
I know, but I don't want to say it. And then there's the iPad Air. That's $499. And also, $399 is the iPad Mini with Retina display. Those are there's four iPads,
and the Retina display Mini and the iPad 4 are now identical prices.
Yeah,
for 16 gigabytes.
Yeah, so good. There you go, and they're all Lightning. To be fair, Apple does sell an adapter that makes Lightning work with the 30-pin connector, right?
Yeah.
So. Yes. Oh, look at this.
It's like animal husbandry, but it exists.
There's a button, compare iPads. There you go. Go there and compare. store.apple.com/iPad/compare. And this, it makes it clear as mud.
And we put up two articles today going through the differences between all of them and then which features you get with each one and which one you should buy.
At least they all have unique names now.
And do we know how this new / old iPad registers itself with iTunes? Because one of the things that people found when they're digging into 7.0 and 7.1 were references to new iPads that had not yet been registered yet.
Ah.
So if that takes up one of those two slots.
Ah. I think it's still 3.5, but I'll double check.
Ah. All right. Well, I guess there's enough now lightning adapters in the Ecoverse. They've saturated the system.
Yeah, it's interesting, though. You rarely see this much real clutter in the Apple lineup. So right now, Apple's telling people, we have two different kinds of 9.7-inch iPad. One is a little bit less expensive than the other, but not so inexpensive that'll push you into the buy column. That'll push a lot of people into the buy column. We now have two iPad minis that are identical, except for one is Retina, one is non-Retina. The non-Retina one, it looks terrible, but it is slightly less, but it's less expensive than the other one, but still not so expensive that if you are in any mood for saving money, it's going to, like, again, shift you definitely into the buy column. Or, excuse me, it'll be a big, big deal to buy this one instead of the Nexus 7 or Kindle Fire tablet. I'm confused by this. I'm interested to see what kind of a house cleaning Apple has in store for the end of the year that would explain why they want to have these many similar looking models of devices in the lineup at the same time.
I guess the other thing that's important to note is that the iPad with Retina display and the iPad Mini, the low priced ones, only are 16 gigs. There are no larger models at all.
It's interesting because previously you could choose between large or small, Retina or non-Retina, and that was our little matrix. Now it's large or small, but the large ones are both Retina, so now it's heavy or light. Yeah. But the small ones aren't. They're the same, basically the same size, but they're Retina or not Retina.
Totally. I wonder if this means they're really feeling pressure or at least they're worried about Samsung and other companies making larger size tablets. Because that's one place in which people who are very sensitive to price are going to basically say, "Yeah, I know iOS is better, but I know the iPad is better." I like the idea of being able to scuba dive underwater with a tablet. But I think I'd rather have my $200 in my pocket and go for this other device.
Pay for the scuba lessons.
Yeah.
All right. Well, now we understand all, and
we Apple-splained it.
We got it. We have pictures. All right. And then the iPad 2 is gone, right? Okay.
Yes.
Okay, it's gone.
Finally. Okay. Spring 2011 to spring 2014. Not a bad.
That's a long run.
I did hear someone say that now that it's dead, I'll pass this along. I didn't want to talk about it earlier because it sounded like just more like an interesting rumor than anything else, that there was some sort of contract Apple had in which they were required to be able to fulfill orders for this thing on demand if the contractee wanted them. And that's one of the reasons why they decided that, okay, we'll keep this on the price list, because it was a real mutt. Apart from being able to keep the schools that have those rack chargers and rack distribution cards ready, that was a big mutt in the iPad line.
Yeah, weird mutt. But now we still have mutts. The 4 and 4S are mutts, but those mutts will be detached soon from the
they'll be available for adoption
kennel. Yeah. Apple has turned on a new form of support, paid chat support. If your Apple device is out of warranty or you don't have Apple Care, you could pay $20 to chat with perhaps with a real person. It is a real person.
You know.
They're training the Apple Care folks in how to use chat. And they have
Hangouts.
In the early parts, apparently in the first day or two, paying for it was not working too well. They call it the Here to Help program for the Apple Care employees, teaching them how to care about the user. My experience has always been with Apple Care. I don't have a lot of experience, but when I've talked to them, they seem to care, actually, which is not always the case on support calls. So I guess it's working. They're acting well. Has anybody used this chat support?
Not yet.
Never.
Here to Help will consist of 3-day training sessions. Apple says we'll transform Apple Care by sharpening our focus on our customers' experience while continuing to provide fantastic product support. Apple is where superlatives go to die.
Industry leading.
They just love their superlatives.
We ignited super the customer special support revolution.
Fantastic.
We are so excited about this. We really think it's the best customer support ever been provided in this class by a company scaling to this grade in the U.S. market.
Over
no one else could.
Over chat. So you can get free technical or diagnostic support, or you could used to be able to get free technical or diagnostic support by just calling Apple Care, right? And so this, now they're going to say, well, You're out of warranty, but for $20, you can chat with us. Is it $20 for one issue, or do you get a month of 20? No, it's $20 per incident.
Per incident, yeah.
That's, by the way, that underscores how much it costs to do support. It's not cheap. And I would guess chat support is cheaper. I notice a lot of people moving to chat support. Why is that? Is it because it's better for us, the user?
Well, a lot of times they're actually managing more than one person.
Yeah. And
you know, so a lot of times what happens is they're actually talking to you, and there's two or three of them that they're talking to, and they're answering your question and answering their question. So while you're responding, they're out answering another question.
Comcast, for instance, now, they really don't want you to talk to a human, but they'll let you chat. I also think it's because these people are not, maybe their English isn't maybe perfect, and they maybe have strong accents. It's hard to understand. And chat's cheaper than a phone system. I'm just noticing a lot of people moving to chat for support. I don't like it.
You get a FaceTime call.
Yeah. I don't like it because it's too much typing.
Also lets them log data a lot more efficiently.
Right. They have a record.
Yeah.
Is there somebody on the roof? Where's that noise coming from?
Wolverines. Someone up there with a broom.
Damn it. Every time we get rid of them and then they move in. I think they're nesting. Nesting wolverines are you need nothing to mess with.
Maybe it's like Clerks. Maybe you got people like playing roller hockey up there during their lunch break. if they aren't, they should be, because that looked like a lot of fun.
No, and the roof, it's very safe because we have knee-high fences to keep them from falling over. So that works.
Knee-high to a wolverine, Leo, or knee-high to a person?
Ah. No, the wolverines are completely safe. I did not read Sir Johnny Ives' interview with the Sunday Times. I admit, I am remiss. I should have read that, but I know you did. We'll talk about it in just a moment. You're watching Mac Break Weekly now with Wolverines. So that's pretty good. No extra charge.
Good Canadian Wolverines.
Really? Really? Are they Canadian Wolverines? Why can't we buy U.S. Wolverines? My God.
Thank you, Obama.
I blame him. Suddenly we're using overseas Wolverines. Our show today brought to you by FreshBooks, also Canadian, by the way, I might add, but actually they're nice. So that's what's so nice about Canadians. I like FreshBooks. In fact, it was Amber MacArthur that introduced me to FreshBooks many moons ago, 10 years ago, when I first started in. I was going to Canada once a month to do the Call for Help show, and I was complaining to her. I said, I got to invoice Rogers, and they want an invoice in Canadian dollars. I got to make the conversion. And then I hate doing invoices. I think I was using Microsoft Word or Excel or something. And she said, oh, Leo, you got to try FreshBooks. It's a new startup, and it's fantastic. They are. I will give you. These guys are great. In fact, I think something like 5 million people now use FreshBooks, not just for invoicing, but for all of their cloud accounting, which is awesome. Tax time's coming, and I know you're kind of looking at that as a cliff you're about to fall off. If you've been using FreshBooks, everything's easy. FreshBooks eliminates, you don't have to hunt for receipts, you don't have to dig through invoices, everything's online. Tax time is a breeze. And of course, you get paid faster with your invoices because they're professional looking. They have a pay me now button right in there. You can capture and track expenses now with FreshBooks and even get real-time business reports with just a couple of clicks. FreshBooks mobile apps for the phone and the tablet make it easy to do time and hours on the road. I think the sooner you start using FreshBooks, the sooner you could start focusing on the work you love. Focus on the work, not the paperwork. So for a limited time, I want you to try FreshBooks. We've got a special two-month trial now, 60 days. GetFreshBooks.com. GetFreshBooks.com. You get a two-month trial, which will make tax time a lot easier. In fact, you still have probably time to get your stuff in order. And if you see the how did you hear about us section, just say it was Mac Break Weekly. GetFreshBooks.com. Make sure you tell them you heard about it on Mac Break Weekly. 2 months free, just in time for taxes. Johnny Ive. We can't get an interview with him. Even Leander Connie couldn't get an interview with him. But if you're British, apparently, no problem. The Sunday Times interviewed Mr. Ive. Did anybody read that?
I read it.
Yeah.
The answers were incredibly similar to the answers he gave, in previous interviews. I don't want the right word for it, but it wasn't very illuminating. It wasn't very new.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what the ground rules were for this. I don't know how much time the interviewer got with him, but a lot of it was, I just feel like the first thing I do is I think about what this product is supposed to do, and only then do I think about what it should look like. And I never stop thinking about how I can improve these products. A lot of a job interview questions where if you want to get the job, say, well, what's my biggest fault? I guess my biggest fault is that I never stop thinking about how I could improve the work that I've done.
Yeah.
So yeah. I wasn't a bad interview. I don't think it was an interview without value, but it kind of was a very surface interview, stuff that you'd already heard him say before, or that you could easily imagine him saying. There weren't a whole lot of insights there.
Carefully controlled, I'm sure, by PR and all of that.
Yeah, I mean, it really did make me think. If I was disappointed at all, it only made me think that I hope that Apple at least is internally allowing people to do interviews and then just lock them away for X amount number of years, because if I think there's going to be a time when people are going to want to know exactly how were these phones made, what was the point of view of the people who are designing this, why was this choice made and not that choice, not even from an engineering point of view, but even from a cultural point of view, they'll want these answers. Future people who are studying engineering are going to want these sort of answers. So the fact that Apple, especially senior Apple executives, they're so tight-lipped and they don't really give interviews, I think that they're denying future students an opportunity to learn a lot about how one of the most important companies out there made some of the most transformative products of our time.
Michael Scott, right? My biggest fault is that I care too much about people.
Kind of treat.
One of the things I thought was interesting is the design team itself is only 15 people. That's seems small to me.
And a lot of them have been there for a long time.
Yeah. The majority of work happens in his office.
Right. With CNC machines right there so that they can have an idea, they can bat it out and then put it on the table and then huddle around it and prod it.
I like this quote. And again, the reason I didn't read it is because I didn't want to pay for a subscription to the Sunday Times just to read that one interview.
I think it's
also on Time. Yeah,
exactly. Oh, really? Okay, good. All right. Because they wanted money on the Sunday Times site. So what I did is I read, all the other people who quoted it. So much, says Johnny Ive, so much has been written about Steve Jobs, and I don't recognize my friend in much of it. Yes, he had a surgically precise opinion. I think that's very nicely put. Yes, it could sting. Yes, he constantly questioned, is this good enough? Is this right? But he was so clever. His ideas were bold and magnificent. They could suck the air from the room. And when the ideas didn't come, he decided to believe we would eventually make something great. And oh, the joy of getting there. Is that hagiography or do you think that's genuine?
I think that's genuine. It's consistent and it continues to be applied year after year after year. Although you're calling my attention to the fact that the one thing that in this interview I think that I had not known before is that nice quote where Ive recalls traveling with Jobs. We get to the hotel where we were going. We check in. I go out to my room, but I would leave my bags by the door. I wouldn't unpack. I'd go and sit on the bed and wait for the inevitable call from Steve. Hey, Johnny, this hotel sucks. Let's go. So
that sounds true.
That sounds like the Steve that we all know.
You can hear him. He actually said he tells a longer version of that story in the video Apple put up for the Steve Jobs memorial, and he says it in his own words, and it's really touching. It's well worth watching.
I love that. We all know somebody like that.
Yeah. And you know that the hotels they're talking about are like the Mandarin, really, really.
Well, that's what I wonder. Where is he going to go?
It's like the Four Seasons. This is horrible. I can't believe that they didn't have gold encrusted towels.
Hot water knob is on the left. But then what do you do?
The atrium of my room has a waterfall, but it's not a great waterfall.
Yeah. It's designed for what human would want that. But I wonder, what do you do then? Do you go to another hotel and another one after that, or
you stay in the jet, Leo?
You stay in the jet. Okay. That's probably the.
It's a square sink. I can't believe it's got square corners.
There is too much and the furniture in this room.
We are. It is 100 with all the lights on. It's 100 foot candles. Too dark. We're out of here.
I don't like the gradient on the wall. You can go on and on.
We were having this argument, and Steve said, "Hey, I understand that Walmart will just let you park right there in their lot overnight. Let's just have the jet land there." There's a reason why I spent so much time picking the leather and the stitching in my jet.
They did ask him about the iWatch, and he said,
"Nice try."
Basically. Obviously, I'm not going to talk about that. But he did say this, which I thought was interesting. He apparently does read the rumors, right? Because he likened the rumors of about the iWatch to a game of chess, which tells me that he's reading the rumors. He must be, I think, as anybody at Apple would be, kind of intrigued by what people think.
I'm just glad he didn't say Game of Thrones, Leo. That would have been
interesting. okay, good. We just saved you some money.
That's too much detail on it. You don't need that many swords on a chair.
Who would make a chair out of swords? Come on. All right. So, good. I'm glad I didn't spend the money. Although, you're saying Time Magazine has it?
Yeah, it has the whole thing.
Is the Times of London related to Time Magazine, or is it just a coincidence?
I think Times just bought it.
Oh, they bought it.
Yeah.
Clever. Would you say that Johnny Ive's comments about Apple were mere puffery? A California judge, Edward Chen, in San Jose, has turned down a request for a class action lawsuit against Apple by a music teacher. Music teacher bought an iMac. Half of the computer's 27-inch screen went dim after 18 months. The teacher sued and asked to be made into a class action for other iMac users who had similar problems. The judge threw it out with faint praise. He said, the judge said, Apple's claims about the Mac's big, beautiful displays and long, productive life do not amount to false advertising. They're mere puffery. So you win some, you lose some. Chen did say Apple may have known about the defect, but it was not obliged to disclose the fault to customers if it fell outside the warranty period and did not create a safety issue. And finally, he said, because it was 18 months in and the warranty is 12 months, you just don't have any standing at all.
Apple care.
Yeah. I had a conversation with someone on Twitter about this this sort of thing, where they're pointing me to a posting someone made because their iPhone battery just went after when it was like 4 or 5 months out of warranty, and took it to the Genius Bar, and they said, okay, we'll swap out a new battery. It'll cost $80 for the part. We won't charge you for labor, of course. And this person on Twitter was upset because they thought that Apple should give better service than that. And I had to point out that, well, it's a 12-month warranty. It was out of warranty. They replaced the part. They're not going to charge, because they could take it in someplace for free and have it fixed for free and just only pay for the cost of the part itself. Sometimes it's difficult. Apple has such a great reputation, mostly earned, that it's hard to understand that they are not a magic company, and they are a company that's in the business of selling consumer electronics to people for money. And as a result, it's not as though they're going to say that, hey, I know that your phone is 9 years old. I know that you ran over it with a truck and then you spit on it, but hey, we'll give you a free one because we're fabulous. That's not how it works. So that's one of the rare liabilities that Apple has for having produced so much great service in the past, so many great long-lasting products in the past, and also creating products that people have such a close emotional connection to. They feel as though, I'm not just buying a phone from any other company. I'm buying a phone from a company that I believed in. And, oh, no, they only did exactly what they promised me they would do when they sold this thing to me. That's horrible.
The expectational debt.
This stuff does break. And after warranty is over, that's the reason why the warranty is not infinite.
And to be honest, I would be very, very bummed, too, if I bought a brand new phone and it required a major service after only about a year and a half.
Right.
I would expect at least 2 years, and I'm really expecting three out of any major consumer electronics.
Well, imagine a $2,200 iMac, 27-inch screen, you can't use it after a year and a half. That pissed me off, but the repair charge is $500. They replace it for $500.
Right. And if this were such a big issue, believe me, we would have been, guys like us would have been on shows talking about this for about every single week for about 18 months since that product came out. So clearly, every now and then you get a machine that doesn't really work that great.
Yeah. Apple has dropped its 30-day return policy on iPhones. It's now only 2 weeks, 14 days. Or it will. I guess it did, March 13th. So return it faster.
I'm guessing that depends on local ordinances too, because some places have consumer protection.
Sure. Yeah. Carriers typically only give you 2 weeks.
Yeah. So we'll break it faster.
The deal was kind of you buy the phone, you go, yeah, I don't really like it that much. You got 2 weeks to bring it back to AT&T, but Apple will say, hey, you can have a whole month to bring it back to us.
I can't even find the box after the second day. That's my problem.
I think I'm gonna
take this back.
Generally, I'm so confident about Apple products, I have to admit that I don't save the box. And I can't say that for a lot of devices, but for Apple products.
Well, that's such a cool, well-designed box.
Well, you know, I tear it open like this. Rip! Apple wants Samsung to pay $40 a device for the 5 software patents the judge and the court in their Apple Samsung lawsuit said Samsung had infringed upon. $40 per phone or tablet.
Good luck with that.
That's a good deal. That's the phone number tapping feature. You know, you tap the phone number and it dials it in an email. The unified search, data synchronization, slide to unlock, and autocomplete. Those are the 5 patents Apple asserts and won in court that Samsung stole. $40 a unit.
So that means that Samsung has to pay that if they continue to use those? I mean, that's the argument?
That's what they want, yeah. Florian Mueller writes in Foss Patent that is kind of an unheard of amount of money, $8 per patent per unit.
You need to get that. I bet you it's on YouTube. You need to get the Braveheart thing where William Wallace rides out and talks to the English noble. That's pretty much what Apple was saying.
Well, and think about if it's $8 a patent, the number of patents in a modern day smartphone. Roughly 125,000.
So they'll ask for the moon. Samsung will offer nothing, and then there'll be some arbitration.
Let's see, $8 a patent. That's about $1 million a device in royalties.
It's funny because Johnny Ive in that interview talked to, like, they asked him, "What do you feel about other companies copying you?" And he was nonplussed about it. He was like, "It's so hard to figure out these problems. It's so much sweat and toil, and then someone just comes along and uses all your answers."
Right. Yeah, but. We've had this conversation before. I mean, if we can set aside the Samsung's first couple phones, you can come up with a pretty good roadmap of ideas that did not originate with Apple, that Apple seemed to think the world of and decided to put into their own devices. But apparently that doesn't count, though.
Nope. It's like you can lend your stuff, but you can't borrow it, Andy.
Exactly. It's like... It's like, no. We simply saw the friction point in someone else's design, and we fixed it. You're welcome.
Florian Mueller is so incensed, he actually publishes the transcripts from this. He says this is really punitive on Apple's part, trying to punish Samsung because there really wasn't any other way to punish them. Well, we'll see. I mean, the judge has... final say in this. That's Lucy Koh, I think. Judge Koh.
Are we taking bets on exactly when this thing will be completely settled?
Never.
I'm not talking about like us having to talk about it. I'm talking about where whatever Samsung did, they've admitted they've done it. However much Apple thinks they should pay, and the judges agreed that they should pay it, then Samsung wrote the check, and it's done with. It's like, for heaven's sake. Mm. Yeah, $40.
But it's cheaper to hold it in court than pay it.
That's absolutely going to happen.
I mean, it's cheaper to hold it in court than to pay it.
Right.
Keep on throwing. I mean, for Samsung, it wouldn't make sense to settle at this point. I mean, they've got nothing to lose other than just to hold it in court.
Here's a cool thing we didn't know about the Apple TV update from last week. We talked about it last week and how it allows us to rearrange icons and, you know, it has the jiggle, jiggle, jiggle thing. But according to Daring Fireball, Apple has also enabled AirPlay device discovery over Bluetooth in update 6.1 on the Apple TV. So you don't need, I guess it means you don't need Bonjour to AirPlay anymore. Apple TV can search for connectable devices over Bluetooth, bypassing not only Bonjour, but I guess Wi-Fi. They're not going to send the signal via Wi-Fi. They're just going to negotiate via Bluetooth. I mean, they're not going to send the signal over Bluetooth. They'll negotiate, and then we'll then send over Wi-Fi, I'm sure.
Yeah, I think that's how Bluetooth 4.0 works in general.
Ah, of course. Is Bluetooth 4.0 in the Apple TV? Or is it the older Bluetooth?
No, I believe it's the current one. That's why you can do the tap to set up.
Ah, nice.
As well.
Very nice. You have a nice review, Renee, on iMore.com of iOS 7.1. It's been out for a week now, a couple of weeks. Or is it just a week? It seems like time is
a week. It launched. Yeah, just they a didn't week. Do a gold master. They just put it live.
We had just gotten it when we did the show last week. Gosh, that's hard to believe. I feel like I've been using iOS 7.1 for years now. I like the usability improvements, I have to say.
Stability is far there. Yeah.
No spring.
Resprings are fixed.
No resprings. Never. Not one.
Yeah, it's solid. I made the point in the review to say that some people will say this is iOS 7 as it was meant to be, but it's really more than that. It's Apple having spent 6 more months, and the lessons they learned launching it the way that it was have let them bring it to where it is now. And it's much solid. It's much more refined. It's much more polished. It's much more consistent. They used to put out the X.1s much faster. They used to come out 3 months later with the iPod touches, and it took them 6 months to get this out. There's not a ton of new features, so it kind of just highlights again how massive the changes were, both above and below the hood for iOS 7.
The new phone app, people have noticed, has not only looks different, but has some nice new features. That's good. You get a picture on the lock screen, right? Is that new?
The button placement are new. The button styling is new. You don't get the full screen picture anymore.
That's right. You get the little dot.
It's a little bit better for privacy.
Yeah.
In mixed company.
Yeah, especially if the picture. Well, you know.
Yeah.
Battery life. Some people have complained that it's reduced their battery life. Have you seen that or heard that, or is that just an isolated few?
So that is absolutely true, but that absolutely happens every time iOS is updated. You'll get it. We run a poll every time, and every time some people say it's much better. Most people say it's pretty much the same, and other people say it's much worse. And the thing that contributes to that the most is the update process. Because when you're updating a million, 10 million, 100 million devices, some of those aren't going to be great. They're going to be bit rot on some of them. There's going to be bad restores on other ones, and all those things can just churn away. They can have rogue processes and just waste your battery life. But if you take a new device, if you take a device and set it up as new on iOS 7.1, you will have as good, if not better, battery life than you did under iOS 7.
That's interesting. So it's a question of taking cruft from previous installs along with you. I've seen some people suggest that resetting all the settings is one way to fix that. You actually have on iMore.com a troubleshooter, how to fix your iPhone, iPad battery life problems on 7.1. You say test the battery life on standby first.
That was especially true on iOS 7 in general. Like if you waited, if you had an iPhone 4 or something and you waited to go to iOS 7 till 7.1, there's so many new features. You're going to be playing with it all the time. And we actually tested this with some people because they were using it so much. The screen was on all the time. Their battery drained much faster. New phone syndrome. So it's really important to actually put it down and watch whether the battery drains or not when it's sitting there. Because a real battery problem, you'll put the phone down at 80%. It'll be hot. You'll pick it up again a few minutes later at 70 or 60%.
Yeah. That's key. In fact, being hot is often a symptom, too. When I feel a phone that's not doing anything hot, then I know there's a runaway something, right?
Yeah. The radios or the processors.
Yeah. So you do say that.
Also,
go ahead.
And also, you want to know that you want to look at where you are. Like, so I spend a lot of time in a lot of different places. And if you have, if you're in a location or a city that has a lot of congestion or a lot of bad cell service, your phone is going to burn up a lot faster. So because it's constantly looking for towers, it's constantly trying to negotiate. And that really will tie up your battery very quickly. And I think I notice it. I mean, I spend enough time in different cities that I notice that certain cities that actually I blame on my battery life. So I know that I'm going to, like in Rwanda is a good example. It's constantly changing things around and moving things around. And so I have to keep charged up much more often than I would at home.
Yeah, race to sleep. If you could, if the phone can power down faster, the battery life will last much longer.
But you do mention that it's not a bad idea to power cycle. If that doesn't fix it, then reset the data. Not erase data, but reset the settings. And if that doesn't work, then a clean install.
Yeah, the clean install is a nuclear option.
I think it's actually good. It's really good to power cycle every once in a while anyway. I've gotten into the habit of power cycling every day or two just to make sure that I have no idea what's running in the background sometimes. I mean, I can probably find out, but it's just easier just to turn it off and on every once in a while. And I find that it definitely, there was something back there that was, you know, burning up time for some reason.
Yeah. I think it's on both my desktops and my mobile devices, it's a good idea to restart them once a week or two, because there are these tiny little gas leaks that will never, ever really show themselves until there's enough critical gas to cause the explosion. And sometimes it takes weeks for that to happen. But also that if I haven't done a full factory reset of a device in a while, I'll probably go ahead and do that. If I've got like a big deadline that I really would love to have an excuse to like not have to work for an entire afternoon, I mean, I will take that opportunity to say that I'm going to not simply upgrade to 7.1. I'm going to wipe the device and start all over again, because it's not just what Renee was talking about cruft building up in the system. It's also like human cruft building up, because how many times do you like download like a free game and then forget about it? Now it's still there. Then you download something else, forget about it, and it's still there. It's only when you start off with just this the bog standard collection of icons, and then you only add icons back when you've realized that, oh, I need Omni Outlander, oh, I need my day planner, oh, I need my contact manager, oh, I need this game. You realize 2 weeks later that you only needed 8 of those 93 apps you had pre-installed, that you hadn't installed before.
Mm-hmm. Here's some good news. Not only will Apple iPhone users be more healthy than Android users, they'll get better entertainment and United flights. United has an in-flight movie service that'll be starting next month, they say, exclusively for Apple iDevices. If you're on an Android phone, you're just going to have to watch the seat back like everyone else. It goes through the United app, so you'll make sure you want to install the United app on your iPhone or iPad. And then I guess it's going to use the Wi-Fi to download content to your device while you're in the air, and you can watch it on your device. Wow.
Well, one of the things I think that they're probably doing with the content there is that they are probably not sending you all the way to the ground. So they're caching all of the movies that you may want to watch. And so you're accessing Wi-Fi, but you're not accessing the, right, you know, the antennas. And so it's right, going to be easier for them to serve. And I think that it's actually not that you'll be watching the screen in front of you. I think a lot of the United flights do not have screens. And I think that this is partially, we don't want to install all those screens. And so I think that, I mean, obviously there'll be an Android version at some point, but I'm sure it was just easier to do they probably did a lot of research on how many people are using their app and decided that a certain percentage of more using are from iOS, and made a calculated decision to release that one first. Yeah.
Plus, if it can get somebody to install the United app that we're not installing it before, that alone is a huge, huge win, because that, now you've got entry into the device they're carrying around everywhere.
Oh.
So that's in itself is a big win. But I agree with that. That's another thing that I thought of. I like United, but whenever I fly United, I tend to notice not only a certain lack of seatback videos, but even, you know, a no smoking sign that's been covered over once or twice. It's not a really new fleet, as far as I'm concerned. I rarely get a seat with an ashtray and the armrest.
That always amazes me. Yeah, you know that's an old plane when it's got an ashtray in the seat rest. Not only an old plane, but one that hasn't been redecorated in several decades.
Yeah.
You can still see the Braniff logo someplace in the washroom.
Yeah. Should I pay the $20 seat upgrade price?
All right, let's take a break, and we come back. Our picks of the week. Our show today brought to you by our friends at squarespace.com. They're making the web a better place, one website at a time. If you've kind of heard us talk about Squarespace, we just love it so much. You cannot bring a Squarespace site down. In fact, it's now become a running joke. When we send people to a website and it goes down, we go, they should have used Squarespace. But there's a lot of other reasons to use Squarespace, because it's not just hosting. It's also the best software, really wonderful software, allowing you to create a site, whether it's a blog or a portfolio for an artist or a photographer, or maybe you want to sell something. Maybe you want to do a donation site. All Squarespace starts with 25 gorgeous templates. Designer templates. Every one of them has e-commerce built into it, has mobile responsive built into it. So you use the Squarespace template that's going to look good on any size screen. And then if you decide, even at the $8 a month amount, that you want to do some e-commerce, you can. You can sell one item. So, you know, if you've got a book, you can sell it. But it's also good if you want to do donations. So if you're a nonprofit, or maybe you're like you're doing a bake sale or a fun drive for your school's sports team, $8 a month, you can do it. It really is a fabulous source of web design. You don't have, if you are a CSS expert or a JavaScript expert, they have a great developer platform, but you don't need to be. Prices start at $8 a month when you register for a year, and when you register for a year, you get a free domain name on all of them. They've got apps to blog with. The blog app is gorgeous. Not only can you post, but you can also monitor comments and approve comments on the go. Their new metric app for the iPhone and the iPad allows you to check site stats like page views, unique visitors, social media followers. I'm just a big fan, and I think you will be too. But the good news is you don't have to guess. You can actually go to squarespace.com. Just click that Get Started button. Oh, I'm just noticing when I move the mouse around, there's a little iPhone-style background parallax there. That's cool. How do you do that? Click the Get Started button. You choose from your templates. Beauty of this is you don't like a template, your content it doesn't go near it, so you just switch to a different template or a new design. Very easy to customize with drag and drop, point and click. 2 weeks free. You don't need a credit card, but if you decide to buy, I invite you to use our offer code MacBreak. You'll get 10% off. Always very affordable. The best, really the best hosting, the best software, squarespace.com. Try it free today and use the offer code MacBreak when you decide to buy to save 10%. Let us get our picks of the week, and we will start things off with you, Alex Lindsay, Mr. Green Screen.
So the green screen, I don't think really properly gives proper credit to this, the green screen key that's being pulled. It gives proper credit to this camera that I'm using. I'm not using a big camera. I was using a big camera, and I had to go and grab this one. And I hesitate because I love this camera so much. I had to tell anyone because it's kind of a secret weapon.
Secret.
That we have here. So this is the camera that I'm using right now. I can't take it off and show it to you, but it is the Cisco Precision HD camera. And this is a it's pretty nifty. It's got a 50 millimeter FOV, and I don't have a 920 with me, but we've been using Logitech 920s and 930s for a long time. We probably have nearly 100 of them for some reason or another somewhere, and we started using this one, and it's not cheap, I will admit. And even those ones there, I mean, we bought them from someone else. I think the real price is probably $320.
Whoa.
So it's a real, but the thing is that it's a real webcam, and it's got a larger, it's got a larger chip in it. And it definitely is a much higher quality video in our opinion. Now, it doesn't look that good when Chad's keying me all the time, but
the key works pretty well. It's actually good.
Alex is calling us from Africa,
ladies and gentlemen. He's not next door.
Right, exactly. So, the thing is one of the things that we had to complain about is having the really wide angle that the 920, 930 create, 930 especially. 930 is great for crowds, like three or four people sitting in front of the camera.
Yeah.
If you're a single person trying to sit in front of a camera, in our opinion, our new opinion right now is that this is probably, and we test almost every webcam that comes out.
This is why we love having Alex right next door, because, we've been recommending the Logitech for so long.
We still love the Logitech. I mean, it's still a great, sharp camera.
It's a lot less expensive. It's half as much.
The other issue that you get into is that if you have an office, there's a lot less office that you have to clean up because it's half the field of view, or not quite half the field of view, but so there's a lot less information behind you as well. Makes it a lot easier for you to kind of manage that process. It's pretty nifty. So that's my recommendation.
Is the Cisco Telepresence camera.
Formerly Tanberg. So this is a Tanberg camera.
Oh, it's a Tanberg. Tanberg's a big name. Yeah.
Yeah, it came with it when Cisco bought them.
Got it. Cisco Telepresence Precision HD thing camera.
There you go.
It does have a model number, but if I tell you that, you're not going to care. It's too long.
All you have to do is search for Cisco Precision HD and you'll find it.
Precision HD. All right. Renee, Richie, we know you have one negative review. Actually, the whole panel did. I haven't read it yet, but last week we made reference to a new book about Apple. Haunted. What is it? Haunted Empire?
Yes. We should tell you a lot about the slant of the book to begin with.
Yeah, by a former Wall Street Journal reporter, you know, and it made it pretty clear that Steve Jobs was haunting Apple. And now you and Annie both said, no, not good
book. It turned out to just be the old man owner of the amusement park trying to scare off the buyers for the new
place. He would have got away with it, too.
Pulled off the ghost Steve Jobs mask, and that's what it turned out to be.
Not a good, so don't get this book, in other words.
No. I mean, like I said, I have a ton of respect for her as a reporter. She has an amazing career. She covered the hell out of Apple for the Wall Street Journal for many years, yeah. But this is not a book. This is a weird series of anecdotes mixed with unsubstantiated opinions that don't sort of link together. It's very odd.
Let's get your recommendation since you disrecommend that.
So if you're not, yeah, so don't spend your time reading that. Spend your time watching the Veronica Mars movie.
Really?
It hit. Yes. So I like this for many reasons. I actually was a fan of Veronica Mars. I like the television series. The movie was pretty much what I expected it to be, but I love the idea of this movie. As someone who watched TV shows like Firefly get canceled, like Angel get canceled, like Veronica Mars get canceled, the idea that a creator could go to Kickstarter and fund a movie, and that movie could go out in movie theaters and hit iTunes the same day it hit movie theaters, not, you know, 6 months later, a year later, the same day it was in movie theaters. I think it was $6 or $7.99 to rent, $24.99 to buy. If you wanted to, you could go and enjoy it with your popcorn and $10 beverage on a giant screen. And if you didn't want to, you could pay a little bit more money and enjoy it in your home theater. And that model has an incredible amount of appeal to me. So on one hand, I'm happy that, you know, Kristen Bell, Rob Thomas, the whole cast and characters were back, that they had yet another adventure. But I'm hoping that a lot more creative types bring their projects to this sort of model, because it would mean that we're no longer subject to the vagaries and whims of mainstream broadcast networks, which allow really weird shows to continue and fan favorites to die.
Warner got in a little trouble when they first released it to the Kickstarter fans, because they did an ultraviolet version for the Kickstarter fans, and people said, it's copy. So they
It's ultraviolet is an industry technology, and that should tell you a lot about it.
Yeah.
Whenever an industry tries to make a technology, you have to go sign up for an ultraviolet account. Then you have to find an ultraviolet provider. A lot of technological people live tweeted trying to do it, and if they had trouble doing it, I can only imagine our civilian friends and relatives trying. But also, it was hard to do for people who use the Apple ecosystem. You could get them on iOS apps, but they didn't enable AirPlay or AirPlay mirroring, so you couldn't beam it to your Apple TV. And there's no ultraviolet app for the Apple TV yet. So it was just a really kludgy experience. I backed it on Kickstarter. I bought a ticket for the premiere, and I bought it on iTunes. But most people, they just want to get it the way they originally paid for it. And I can't blame them.
Well, and as Rob himself said, it doesn't seem fair that if you paid for a copy of the movie a year ago, if you were a backer on Kickstarter, that you have less choice than people who decide to buy it today.
And Warner Brothers owns part of Ultraviolet, so it's no surprise they went with that.
Warner Brothers did offer to refund Kickstarter backers for the price of a film. Now I have never seen – I love Kristen Bell. I think she's fabulous, but I've never saw the TV show. Would I enjoy the movie?
It is Buffy without vampires. So if you enjoy that sort of really strong female lead character, very smart dialogue, very witty, it's a typical murder mystery sort of a structure, but it's got a lot of young, I would call it teen angst in the original show, but now she's in her 20s and in law school. So
yeah.
Young person angst.
Yeah.
But I love the way it's
apparently
put together.
Apparently a successful opening weekend theatrically. Well, a little slow, they made $2 million at the box office, and Rob Thomas is already talking sequel. So I think they feel like it's a success. It did cost more than $2 million to make, but it's not over yet.
One, they got the Kickstarter backing. But I like this model. I like that Joss Whedon or somebody else,
who's
a very passionate creator, could go and do this.
Yep. Mr. Andy Inatko, your pick of the week.
I got two quick picks. Because Renee decided to go into the performing arts with one that decided to also mention Diana Domrau Forever, which
Are
has
you
been
married
available
to her. Is she your secret girlfriend?
I just dig her. She's my favorite soprano. She has that. There is a lot of opera music I didn't get into because performers who had this really just, to me, just an obnoxious style that wasn't really very humanistic. There wasn't a lot of acting, there wasn't a lot of performance in it. And then the first time I heard her in a performance, like, oh, okay, let's see what else she's recorded. Great, this is a great CD. It's one third is like recital pieces, the other two thirds are like Broadway and movie musical tracks, which is often off putting for an opera singer because as a kid, my parents had the Placido Domingo like pop album, which was I could have danced tonight.
Yeah, I don't want that. Yeah.
And so she basically shows, what if you have someone who
Gomer Pyle sings My Fair Lady.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. So when she sings these songs, it's more like she adapts her style to make it suitable for exactly perfect for this sort of stuff. It's been available in the UK since October. Of course, I special ordered it in the fall. Finally available in the US on the iTunes store and as a CD on Amazon as of last week. Good stuff. Again, if you're not into opera, if you just like good vocalists, I think you'll really enjoy that. But the more conventional thing is, I've become sort of nuts for Domke's hardware wraps, D-O-M-K-E. These are like you've seen cases that are designed to form fit they're laptop sleeves, or it's an iPhone case, or it's a camera bag or something where it's a form fitted and has a latch and stuff like this. These are what these wraps are is that it's just simply a rectangle of fabric that is Velcro affinity.
Is that your codpiece? What is that?
Well, it's like a diaper. So the deal is that you can basically create a case for anything that you want. So, for instance, I've got my new camera, and now I can simply unwrap this, and there it is. So if I want to just carry this around like in my shoulder bag and not get it scratched and dinged, I've got something that fits the thing perfectly and doesn't take up too much space, and I still have this square of wrap that I can then use for pretty much anything else that I'm traveling with. So it's adaptable. So if I fly out with this wrapped around my camera, but then I need to repack something and there's something that I was going to carry on my side bag that needs to be packed inside my bag, I can use that to wrap something else. And they're really, really versatile. I bought one for, believe it or not, just a camera lens, and then wound up like buying every size that they had. And by accident, finding it, let me put that down on the floor so I don't drop it. And by accident finding, for now at least, my favorite 13-inch laptop sleeve, which is just this thing right here. It is just a 19-inch version of that wrap, but you simply Velcro this up, and now you've got a plain, simple envelope that fits it perfectly. I've been absolutely stymied. It sounds OCD, but believe it or not, ever since I got this 13-inch notebook, I have been absolutely stymied trying to find a sleeve that actually fit it. I don't want a sleeve that almost fits it. I don't want a sleeve that's too big for it, but you can get it inside there. I want something that will fit it perfectly so that when I stick it in my 13-inch laptop bag, it's not. I don't have to like fold this notebook in half so that it and the sleeve actually fits into it. So this will, because I can adjust the fit perfectly, it fits perfectly. It doesn't matter that I have like a USB drive plugged into one of the ports, and it works just great. And they're dirt cheap. They're like they're like $10 to $15 or $17 each. And like I said, I bought a bunch of them because now when I pack for a trip, basically anything that needs a little bit of padding now is wrapped in one of these because I've got a different color for everything. They're cheap, they work, and they're highly, highly adaptable.
And in the film industry, those are called C-48s. Did you know that? Diapers and for your iPhone. Yeah.
And I do have to second that. I have a lot of those.
Do you? You use those too?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, yeah. I bought, same thing with Andy. I bought one, and then I bought a lot of them. I was like, this is amazing. Because we have all these different, we have all this, because I was literally going to have people start making them for us. And and so I haven't shared them with most of the company yet. They're still using the old cases because I've been testing them because I wanted to make sure that I liked them. But I have, a bunch of them now. And I really, what's great about them is they're durable. They do exactly what the neoprene bags did, except that one of them can fit a bunch of different sizes. You don't end up with exactly what Andy was saying. It's just, they're great wraps. If you're thinking about that for lenses, or for me, all my little hardware components that I'm trying to fit into a 1510,
I think Johnny Ive would hate these.
You make them out of aluminium.
Just would hate them. Why? You want a perfectly fitted case for your device, made for it.
Want it to be inevitable.
Yeah, it had to be this way.
His team would do a version of it. It would also be Velcro, but it would make no sound when you pull it apart.
Silent.
Yeah.
I have too many picks. I was hoping one of you would mention Microsoft OneNote, now available for free on the Macintosh. They've had web versions for some time. It is, you know, I would guess for some people who use OneNote in business or at the office, they will really like it. It's a note-taking application. I'm full screen on it with the patented Microsoft Ribbon toolbar, which I think a lot of Mac users hate. If they had charged $20 for this, I would not recommend it. But the fact that it's free, and some of you may actually already be using OneNote to share. In fact, we use it on the show to share notes from Windows Weekly because they're all Windows users. The fact that it's on the App Store and it's free makes it worthwhile. By the way, Microsoft stock going up today on the rumors that Microsoft is imminently going to release Office for the iPad.
Yeah, they have a big media event next week, I think, but the first public event with their new CEO.
Yeah,
so
yeah, and OneNote for the iPad and iPhone have been out for some time. So OneNote is kind of like Evernote. It is at least cross-platform. If you're a big Office user, this is probably something at least worth downloading and taking a look at. The other thing I'll just do a quick mention of, because I'm going to review it on Before You Buy in just a little bit. But I finally, you know, I've been looking for, now that I have a ridiculously expensive Mac Pro, I've been looking for Thunderbolt 2 peripherals, and particularly a Thunderbolt 2 hard drive, because the internal drive, I only got 500 gigs internal drive on the Mac, and I pretty much filled it up. I don't have enough room for the operating system, the apps, and the data, so I needed a fast external drive. LaCie had been promising this little big disk for some time. They've been making the little big disk for a while, but this is a Thunderbolt 2, native Thunderbolt 2 enclosure for dual SSDs. They can be in RAID 0, RAID 1, which of course cuts the capacity in half, or JBOD, just a big old disk mode, or just a bunch of disks sometimes. But this is a terabyte, very expensive, $12.99, but I got to tell you, fast. So fast that it's actually faster than the SSD inside this MacBook Retina. I have the 2012 Retina in front of me, and it's like half the speed over Thunderbolt 1. When you're using this on a Mac Pro, it is fast enough to do 4K video editing and ingesting and playback. So it's very, very fast. That's who this is for. But, of course, if you own a Mac Pro, obviously money doesn't matter. So,
like gasoline in the Lambo.
Yeah, but it's beautiful, and it's little. It's what did you say? I mean, it's like the size of two decks of cards. It's surprisingly small. Really like it.
Looks like an e-cigarette.
Yeah, I'm vaping right now. So that's the little big disc. A full review coming up on Before You Buy in just a little bit. A couple of tips for you. It is very, very, very fast. Thank you, Andy Nocco, Chicago Sun-Times. We love you. We love your clock. And we hope
I
you
love you
back.
In return. And the clock has no opinion being an inanimate object, but it has a style and an elegance that befits its presence here on a Twit.
I've been loving your Olympus pictures, your OMD M1 pictures.
I'm loving that. That's if I can make it. If I could, I've got at least three picks of the week worth of love for this camera. I'm very happy.
Very nice, and we love the images. See, we get the benefit of it because we get to see all those nice pictures. Where's the best place to follow your pictures? Google Plus.
Flickr, really. Flickr. That's where I like to like photo blog. Although they're doing a big site redesign change that might make it harder for. I like posting a photo and then having a few paragraphs about the photo. And so I might I'm doing a redesign of my blog that might take that stuff back to my blog. But Flickr is my public backup of photos that I really really like.
And he's Andy I on Flickr if you want to follow him there. And a lot of waterlogged stuff. Really enjoying that.
My review is coming tomorrow. I wrote the review, and then it turned into a bigger essay on the app and other things. And then, let's see if it'll work with this. Ooh, let's see if it'll work with this. Then I realized, didn't you mean to publish this a week from yesterday? Yeah, you did, Andy. Okay.
You can't stop waterlogging.
I'm not saying that's a bad thing, Andy. I'm just taking note of the fact that we did plan on publishing this a week from yesterday.
I've been playing with it as well, and I just love it. I think it really does something with these images that are just that's just gorgeous.
And what I think is interesting is that it takes images that weren't that good as photos and makes them actually these. There's something about them, and I've learned. I mean, I'm using it almost every day. Like anytime I'm waiting for something or in line, I'm like, what's another photo that I'm going to try to waterlog? And it's wow, there's video. I got video behind me now. Anyway, so the it's fantastic.
These are amazing images, Andy. I really am enjoying them. He's a watercolorist. I could just see you sitting there in your beret with your easel.
I was thinking about this, and this is like a, something I put into the essay. I'm thinking that how cheesed off would like local artists be if I printed up like a half dozen of these and hung them up like in a local coffee shop for like $75, and how fast would they sell compared to? But I studied for like 8 years. And it took me 3 months to do that one, and it's been there for like a year and a half. You did a, you put a photo app on a squirrel and you sell as many as you can make.
Giclée, my friend. Just keep that in mind. Renee Ritchie, iMore.com. Great to have you as always.
Thank you. I'll be in the studio next week, Leo.
Oh, yeah. You get coming out for Macworld probably. Yes. When is Macworld? Soon.
Next Wednesday. I think it starts next Thursday.
All right. Great. So good. We'll have Renee in studio. And actually, I think Alex will be in London next week.
I will be. I'll be in London.
So. All right.
Halfway
Alex,
back.
Will you be in London or will you be in London?
Mm. He cannot confirm or deny.
He'll actually be walking across Abbey Road barefoot, and that should be a very nice
Humpets
image.
With the Queen.
I saw someone doing an Abbey Road photo in Petaluma in front of the McNear in the Mystic Theater. I was like, it was the weird. It was just, I was like, this is not London. I'm just saying. I mean, it's a great place. I mean, I think that
buy
McNear
a ticket.
Is great.
Go see it. You know, there have been some the releases of the outtakes, I guess, or other images from that photo session. It's really interesting to see them walking the other way. It's just very it's like what? And Paul has shoes on. It's like, what?
And see Paul fixing Ringo's collars.
Isn't that a great shot?
Doesn't it freak you out, though? Because, wait a minute. It's like seeing video of like the Mona Lisa, like pulling some hair out of her eyes.
Yeah.
Like, wait a minute. You're not supposed to move.
Yeah.
You're a moment in time.
Some things just should not be messed with. Let me see where I can. TheBeatlesBible.com seems to have a few of them and some other places. It's kind of just, there they are walking the other way. I just love that.
Wrong way.
That's the original. They're going the wrong way.
Going the wrong way.
There's nothing necessarily wrong with it, but your brain says no. I refuse to even look at that. That's wrong.
Yeah, and this is the one you're talking about, which I really, really love, of Paul fixing Ringo's, and the little old lady going, "What are you doing? What are you guys doing?
Just stop it, John."
That's actually Yoko Ono in the purple coat.
The night changed like 10 seconds ago. You can move or what? Jeez.
Thank you, everybody, ladies and gentlemen. Of the jury, we submit this for your approval. MacBreak Weekly is every Tuesday, 11 a.m. Pacific. That's 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC on twit.tv. Please join us. Watch live if you can. If you can't, on-demand audio and video, always available at twit.tv/MBW or wherever finer netcasts are aggregated and downloaded to your device for your later perusal and enjoyment. Also on YouTube. We'll see you next time. Now back to work, because you know what? Break time, it's over.